She was hurrying off as she talked. Her brown hand waved a jaunty salute as she melted into her party at the door. Rather ashamed that on my first appearance I'd stayed so late, I joined the last of Gatsby's guests who were clustered around him. I wanted to explain that I'd hunted for him early in the evening and to apologize for not having known him in the garden. "Don't mention it," he enjoined me eagerly. "Don't give it another thought, old sport." The familiar expression held no more familiarity than the hand which reassuringly brushed my shoulder. "And don't forget we're going up in the hydroplane tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Then the butler, behind his shoulder, "Philadelphia wants you on the phone, sir." "All right, in a minute. Tell him I'll be right there. Good night. Good night. Good night." He smiled, and suddenly there seemed to be a pleasant significance in having been among the last to go, as if he had desired it all the time. "Good night, old sport. Good night." But as I walked down the steps, I saw that the evening was not quite over. 50 feet from the door, a dozen headlights illuminated a bizarre and tumultuous scene. In the ditch beside the road, right side up, but violently shorn of one wheel, rested a new coupe which had left Gatsby's drive not 2 minutes before. The sharp jut of a wall accounted for the detachment of the wheel, which was now getting considerable attention from half a dozen curious chauffeurs. However, as they had left their cars blocking the road, a harsh, discordant din from those in the rear had been audible for some time, and added to the already violent confusion of the scene. A man in a long duster had dismounted from the wreck and now stood in the middle of the road, looking from the car to the tire and from the tire to the observers in a pleasant, puzzled way. "See," he explained, "it went in the ditch." The fact was infinitely astonishing to him, and I recognized first the unusual quality of wonder and then the man. It was the late patron of Gatsby's Library. "How'd it happen?" He shrugged his shoulders. "I know nothing whatever about mechanics," he said decisively. "But how did it happen? Did you run into the wall?" "Don't ask me," said Owl Eyes, washing his hands of the whole matter. "I know very little about driving, next to nothing. It happened, that's all I know." "Well, if you're a poor driver, you oughtn't to try driving at night." "But I wasn't even trying," he explained indignantly. "I wasn't even trying." An awed hush fell upon the bystanders. "You want to commit suicide? You're lucky it was just a wheel, a bad driver not even trying." "You don't understand," explained the criminal. "I wasn't driving. There's another man in the car." The shock that followed this declaration found voice in a sustained, "Ah," as the door of the coupe swung slowly open. The crowd, it was now a crowd, stepped back involuntarily, and when the door had opened wide, there was a ghostly pause. Then, very gradually, part by part, a pale, dangling individual stepped out of the wreck, pawing tentatively at the ground with a large, uncertain dancing shoe. Blinded by the glare of the headlights and confused by the incessant groaning of the horns, the apparition stood swaying for a moment before he perceived the man in the duster. "What's the matter?" he inquired calmly. "Did we run out of gas?"
"Look."
Half a dozen fingers pointed at the amputated wheel. He stared at it for a moment and then looked upward as though he suspected that it had dropped from the sky.
"It came off,"
someone explained. He nodded.
"At first I didn't notice we'd stopped."
A pause. Then, taking a long breath and straightening his shoulders, he remarked in a determined voice,
"I wonder if you tell me where there's a gasoline station."
At least a dozen men, some of them a little better off than he was, explained to him that wheel and car were no longer joined by any physical bond.
"Back out," he suggested after a moment. "Put it in reverse." "But the wheel's off."
He hesitated.
"No harm in trying," he said.
The caterwauling horns had reached a crescendo, and I turned away and cut across the lawn toward home. I glanced back once. A wafer of a moon was shining over Gatsby's house, making the night fine as before, and surviving the laughter and the sound of his still glowing garden. A sudden emptiness seemed to flow now from the windows and the great doors, endowing with complete isolation the figure of the host, who stood on the porch, his hand up in a formal gesture of farewell. Reading over what I've written so far, I see I've given the impression that the events of 3 nights several weeks apart were all that absorbed me. On the contrary, they were merely casual events in a crowded summer, and until much later they absorbed me infinitely less than my personal affairs. Most of the time I worked. In the early morning, the sun threw my shadow westward as I hurried down the white chasms of lower New York to the Probity Trust.